Welcome to Spectrum from China America Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories of interest to our China America Radio listeners in the United States and around the world. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Welcome again. It's another Spectrum show, and we are into 2019 and soon to be the year of the pig on the Chinese calendar. I've invited a guest that actually been trying to throw a net over and drag in here for a couple of years now. We've known each other a spell, but he's a pretty well-known guy around New York and the Chinatown community, particularly in the photography world, and he is Corky Lee. Corky, welcome, finally, to China America Radio.
Well, glad to be here. Thank you, Steve.
So let's get to know you a little bit better. I know folks have probably seen your work at various museums and exhibits around the city. Tell us about your background. Where were you born? What was your early recollection growing up as a kid here?
Well, like I said, I'm an ABC from NYC. So I was born here in Queens, and for the better part of my life, I've always lived here.
Where was your family from?
My family is from southern China. They're Taiwanese. My father came over as a paper son during the Depression in 1929. His only English lessons was, he said two lessons in a Sunday school in Baltimore.
Okay.
And my mother came over as a war bride after the war in 1946. Because my father was drafted during the Second World War, and he was assigned to the China-Burma-India campaign, which was part of the 14th Army Air Corps, or better known as the Flying Tigers, which was a mercenary group that the nationalist Chinese hired American pilots to down Japanese planes.
What was the extent of or degree of Chinese influence in your growing up?
Well, basically, it's the influence is from my parents. But beyond that, I probably had to borrow from both cultures.
As a kid and growing up, did you have any aspirations about what you wanted to be or what you wanted to become?
I don't think I had anything particular in mind. I just wanted to not do the same type of work that my parents were, which was the laundry business. And by the time I was in junior high school, I got introduced to the restaurant business because my first cousin opened up a takeout restaurant in Forest Hills. Actually, maybe Forest Hills Regal Park. So while I was in junior high school, I worked there handling orders and making some deliveries.
Were most of your peers and friends growing up from Chinese community or mixed?
In the neighborhoods that I grew up in, there weren't too many Chinese, in the community or in school. The first location was in Cambia Heights. Then we moved to Hollis, Queens, and then eventually to Jamaica, Queens. Until I moved into Elmhurst, there was wherever we lived, there was not a really big Chinese community unless we would go down to Chinatown on weekends. Initially, in public school, up to probably maybe the fourth, maybe the fifth grade, after public school, we went down for Chinese language school. And that just got to be too laborious. So 5 days a week, that was, much too of a hassle because of the commute after, school back then, and you had to do your homework and so forth. So my parents capitulated, and then we would go down for Sunday school Chinese lessons. So it was from, 5 days a week to 1 day a week. But while I was in Chinatown, that's where I got to interact with the Chinese community.
So when you were in, let's say, high school and that age and beyond, had your career trajectory taken some form?
I think the first form probably was in junior high school because that was the first time I read in my history book that the Chinese built the railroad. So but I couldn't see any Chinese in that historic photograph that's in probably every American history book. I even went to Woolworth and I bought a magnifying glass, hoping that I would be able to see because the photograph was so small. And it didn't work.
Well, that famous photograph at Promontory Point of the two trains, the Jupiter and the 119, face to face at the laying of the golden plank, or the plank and the golden spike, several golden spikes actually, apparently had a great influence on you because it drove you to a number of projects. But let's get to your interest in photography. You're staring at pictures in books. You must have wanted to take some of your own at some point.
No, not really. It wasn't until after I left college that my interest in photography began. I started working as a community organizer, the same type of job that Barack Obama had in his early days. And the job required for me to organize tenants against their landlords, you know, to make the necessary repairs. So I would take before and after photographs. So it was photography at that point was part of my job.
Right.
And then once the tenants in a given building won reparations and they had their repairs and violations corrected, I would take another photograph, another set of photographs, and then with that first set, I would, you know, take it to the next, you know, building. And so it was. That's how the photography began.
What was your college experience? What was your where were you going in college?
I had majored in American history, and
okay.
While I was majoring in American history, I got a chance to finally have a Chinese American professor, and the term paper was about the Chinese and the railroad. So I got to do some research, you know. So between junior high school and college, I really didn't do much. But I would say that it was a seed that got planted.
Somewhere between the photo story that we're going to speak of in just a bit about the trains and the before and after pictures of the apartments, what other photography engagements did you explore? And
I don't think I really had that much you know, photographic interest. But during that time, this would be in the late 60s or early 70s, there was a lot that was happening among Asian American students, Chinese and Japanese American students. So that's when I basically picked up a camera. My brothers all had cameras. You know, I was the eldest of four, but they all had cameras before I did. So, being the eldest, I could always, you know, nudge one of the other three to borrow their camera. But then I had a roommate who had an extra camera that he wasn't using. His cameras of choice was a Leica, and he had a Pentax. So I borrowed his, and I used Nikons and Minoltas. So I found out that I could afford to purchase a Pentax camera, and I started to photograph events that took place, basically the anti-war, anti-Vietnam, anti-imperialism during that time period.
So let's fast forward now to the picture of the two trains and the meeting at Promontory Point. Obviously, there's an aspect of that that you alluded to a moment ago about the fact that all of the people in that photograph are non-Chinese people, basically white European people that were there. Tell me your recollection and what you've read and studied historically about how that picture came to be and where were the Chinese people?
Well, probably about around 2010, I was aware of the fact that in Promontory Summit, there was a local Utah Historical Society that would have a reenactment of the railroad, and it would always take place on May 10th, come rain or shine. So I did some research, you know, looking at what was done there and looking at photographs and speaking to people around the country. I think on the 125th and maybe the 130th anniversary of that, there were some Chinese from the West Coast that would go out, but they would be bystanders. You know, they were not in the official railroad, you know, reenactment photograph. I said in 2013, I was at a conference for Organization of Chinese Americans, better known as OCA. and they had a sort of a workshop about Chinese American history, something along those lines. And I said, did it occur to you that next year is the 145th anniversary? And I said that if it were in my power, I would organize a flash mob and bring as many Chinese together. And, you know, maybe there may be a number of Chinese railroad descendants. I would just have them come up there. And when they got into to posing the official, you know, reenactment photograph, we would just rush the stage.
That was take over, right?
Sort of take over and kind of photobomb. Well, the Historical Society would have people dress in period clothing. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I noticed was they would have women dress in period clothing, and they would get into the reenactment photograph. And I said, well, wait a minute. You know, in the original photograph from 1869, there were no women in period clothing that appeared.
Or women at all.
Yeah, at all. But I knew that there were women in period clothing that were not in the photograph. So not only were the Chinese omitted, you know, women were omitted, but for about roughly 60 years that this historical society has been doing this, they would have women, but they never invited any Chinese, despite the fact I think beginning around 2010, I had read some sort of statistic that there was like 1,000 Chinese living in Salt Lake City, and it was not just the I don't know about the rest of the state, but you know, Salt Lake City being a big enough city, mm-hmm. Okay. So, but at that meeting, that conference I was in 2013, I got to know some people from Salt Lake City who happened to be Chinese, and one of them, actually two of them, it was a brother and sister, were told me that they were descendants of railroad workers. So I said, okay, fine, you know, maybe within a year's time, OCA would organize something, because I know that in 2003, they had a conference, national OCA conference there, and they wanted to honor me, and I had suggested somebody else who was closer to Salt Lake City than I was from San Francisco. But they persisted, and they wanted me to come out and so forth. So I said that I will only come out if you organize a gathering of all the Chinese participants in this conference to get in front of the locomotives. And it was 2003. And they said, oh, yeah, well, we have that plan. So they rented like six buses and, you know, you do the math, six times 50 people in the bus, you know, that comes out to roughly 300 people.
Were most of those people aware of the fact that they had that their ancestors had been left out of the photograph?
Was in 2003,
they were pretty well schooled in all.
Yeah, they knew, so that they wanted to make a statement. Mm-hmm. But this was in the middle of August, which was not on the anniversary. So I figured that if 300 people showed up for this, but it was a national conference, then something that OCA national. Could do something for 2014 on the 145th anniversary, because at the time it was on, I think it was the 133rd anniversary or the 133rd year.
So there you are with your cameras and all these people start showing up. What was that shoot like? What was that day like?
Well, actually it was actually a planned, planned flash mob that took place.
But yet, when people started showing up and it became real, there must have been some emotional engagement there.
Well, we gave the national parks people, the park rangers, some sort of a hint that we wanted to, you know, be present. And they said, oh, yeah, fine. Okay, but we didn't. I didn't tell them any more than, you know, what I wanted to have done. So about three buses, you know, and private cars, so... I think NPR and the local newspaper, the Salt Lake Tribune, said that there was over 200 individuals there. I knew that the park opened up at 9 a.m. in the morning. So I said, okay, we have to leave Salt Lake City at 7, 90 miles. So this way, you know, if people are late, you know, we depart about 7:30 to get there at 9. We get there at 9 and... I think the park rangers are a little astounded that, you know, three buses and all these Chinese pouring out of three buses, you know. So they sort of took it in stride and they parked the buses. And so at 9 o'clock when the park opened up, basically have people are already there. Or the park opens up at 9, people sort of come in. And I knew that the official ceremony wasn't until 11:30. Okay, so I figured, all right, fine. Once they get the two locomotives together, because I had looked at some newsreel footage, you know, from years before. So I sort of figured out, you know, what was going on. So then when they got the two locomotives together and the actors in the period clothing and so forth, I spoke to the guy who's the head of the Historical Society, and I told them sort of in advance, well, we're going to have quite a number of Chinese, and we'd like to take a group photograph, all right? I didn't say that we wanted to be in the official reenactment photograph, so it basically was separate. But aside from the usual cast of people that were dressed in period clothing, something in the neighborhood of 200 Chinese showed up, and we got to take our own photograph. So that's become somewhat viral because people have seen that. Last year when I donated a photograph at the conference for the annual reunion, it raised $4,190.
Well, I think that the whole story is just remarkable, and it actually plays off of a very famous photo that just about everybody in America has seen at some point, and a place and a time in American history, and a backstory that not many people are aware of. So we certainly want to applaud your efforts at helping to marshal that activity. Yeah. And I guess there will be future events like that.
This year will be the 150th anniversary. So there's a conference, there are performances, you know, off-site in Salt Lake City. David Henry Hwang is going to do his Dance on the Railroad. A fellow named Jason Ma is going to do a musical called Gold Mountain. Another fellow is going to do a play called Citizen Wong. It's about activities of a Chinese American activist from the 19th century. His name is Wang Chen Fu. The provision of the act said that every Chinese in this country had to carry around a photo ID. We think of photo IDs as, you know, necessary for security purposes, but in 1892, the only people that had to carry photo IDs, in addition to the Chinese, were convicted criminals and prostitutes. So his testimony before Congress in 1892 was that I would rather you hang me than drag me out of my bed in the middle of the night to be photographed for a photo ID.
Well, Corky Lee is a well-known personality around Chinatown. I know you're involved in an ongoing series of events. I hope that having opened our door to you today for this interview and this little get-to-know-you session, that from now on you'll stop back by and keep us posted with some of the other events. If folks would like to follow you or like to see some of your work, how can you direct them to go online?
They can follow me on Facebook. I'm the only Corky Lee that's Asian.
You're easy to spot, right?
I'm easy to spot.
Okay, and you've got gallery shows and other things periodically, and we'll talk more about that the next time we get together. Corky, it's been my pleasure to have you with us, and good luck with all your future stuff, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Listen again next Sunday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern for another edition of Spectrum. To hear previously broadcast editions of Spectrum, visit the Spectrum tab on our website to listen or download your favorite past programs. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Spectrum. Now, back to the music on China America Radio.